ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, September 17th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we welcome two guests to the program here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're going to chat a little bit about what we saw in week two of the NFL season, then take a look ahead here to week three, including three game breakdowns for you. Also, a couple of interesting golf events this week. One on the European Tour, the BMW PGA Championship, and then one on the PGA Tour, the Sanderson Farms Championship. A lesser field for that one, but if you can get in on some of these guys before their prices really drop, some good equity and some good value in that. So we'll talk about those two events with Brian. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Rolf Michaels will join me from WagerTalk.com. We're chat college football week four, including three breakdowns of marquee games, Michigan, Wisconsin, Auburn, Texas A&M among them. Then we'll also do some NFL week three stuff as we take a look at a couple of marquee games coming up on Sunday. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff over there from our very talented cast of writers. This morning, I put together our recap articles for the Super Contest and also the Circa Million. Yesterday, posted my college football power ratings, opening line reports for both college football and the NFL. We'll have some NASCAR stuff as we go throughout the week. WNBA playoffs for this week. We got a preview up of tonight's Sparks versus Sun game one. We'll have Danny Vorgs' NFL power ratings this week. And also over on our Bang the Book YouTube page, bunch of free pick videos coming your way here today and tomorrow. So make sure you keep an eye out for that over on our Bang the Book YouTube channel. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It's going, bud. Football season rolling right along, and a lot of weird, wacky things happen this weekend in the NFL. Now we try to figure out what it means down the road.
And that's going to be the tough part, trying to figure out what it all means, because not only do we have some teams that are just absolutely awful, we've got two lines this week in the 20s in the NFL, which is unheard of. We've never seen that before. And then a bunch of injuries, including, you know, key skill position guys like Roethlisberger, like Darnold with the illness with mono. You've got, you know, just so much going on here in the NFL, Tyreek Hill, guys like that being out. It's a real challenge to figure out how some of these teams are going to respond.
And honestly, it's a horrible look for the NFL. You know, I get the Jets thing clearly with injuries, but come on, man, two games with the line is more than three touchdowns. This can't happen. It's professional football. I mean, all bad jokes aside, this Miami thing, what's the number going to be when Miami goes to New England? I mean, this is embarrassing. It's like, you know, it's like Alabama playing pick a team, Alabama playing Coastal Carolina, please.
Well, the one saving grace for Miami is I believe that game is week 17. So New England may not have anything to play for, but if they do, with Miami, you know, maybe 1-14 at that time, maybe 0-15, that line's got to be 30. If not, I mean, it's crazy. So I guess we'll kind of wait and see what happens here. But, you know, it's not even just them. And there are also teams that, look, I mean, if Oakland winds up with, let's say Derek Carr gets hurt, Oakland's a two-touchdown dog to everybody all of a sudden. It's insanity.
Well, I've always said that, you know, I don't think, and the question is how many good ones are actually out there. But I've always said teams don't invest heavily enough in the backup quarterback position, because come on, every hit is a car wreck. And there's just something about football. Injuries have always been a thing in football, but these non-contact injuries, they train year round. I don't know. It seems to me like these guys are more fragile and they're bigger, faster, stronger. You throw that into the loop, The backup quarterback position's no joke.
No, it's definitely important. And, you know, I know that's something we'll talk about once we get to the NHL season is, you know, taking a look at backup goaltenders, because you pay a lot of close attention to that as well. You know, it's important to have depth in all of these sports. And some of these teams just don't really have it at the quarterback position. And you kind of wonder why they got themselves into that scenario. But, you know, look, it's not even just that. I mean, the NFL is a watered down product now because of injuries already. But you and I were ranting about this here this morning already. And, you know, on an ill-fated recording that we started, had to start over here on today's show, but officiating, the PI calls, the offensive and defensive, all these roughing the passer calls, you can't hit the quarterback anymore. It's so hard to bet this sport these days because you not only do you have to try and pick the right side, but you also have to run on the right side of all these penalties, these injuries, so on and so forth.
Well, the pass interference thing is a huge kettle of fish. And to the point where you're sitting there, and if it's the announcer on TV or you're in your living room, and Antonio Brown puts two hands at the base of the defender's spine and pushes away and catches it, and everybody goes, well, that's obvious offensive pass interference, and it's not. And they're like, well, what am I looking at? And then the Saints thing is the most egregious thing to me, and how that could happen to them against the Rams again, where basically it's a 3-3 game. They force a fumble. They're running for a touchdown. They're 40 yards downfield. And the side judge comes running in and blows the play incomplete. And as he's running, you're going, well, yeah, okay, great. Saints are going to get the ball, but they're going to get it at their own 13 with Teddy Bridgewater instead of being up 10-3, which means they actually had a puncher's chance in that game. And if there's a gray area, you let it play out. But it was like, at first blush watching it, it was a fumble. And now this guy could jump in and automatically, with conviction, say it was incomplete. I mean, aren't they told to let it play out and then we'll review it? I mean, that was criminal. And nobody, all they talk about is the Drew Brees injury, and they get off the hook, and nobody ever talks about that play. Even with Bridgewater, if they scored a touchdown there, they could have won that game.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and that's, you know, and we saw it in college over the weekend. You know, a couple of games, the conferences have to, you know, release a statement, send out a press release of, well, yeah, this should have been a 15-yard penalty on Arizona State, or, yeah, there should have been a second left on the clock for North Carolina. And it's like, okay, great. What does it mean for those teams? You know, a Sunday night news dump of, well, yeah, we screwed up. Okay, like, get it right the first time, or you review everything else. I mean, you know, if the guy's got a clear path to the end zone and he would have scored if you made the right call, well, then it's a touchdown. I mean, I don't know.
It was exciting.
It's frustrating.
It was exciting, but I would say to you, I was shocked there wasn't more fallout or people talking about the end of the Bears game. I guess that a player surrenders himself. But he's the wide receiver goes down and surrenders himself with 1 second left. That doesn't mean the play's automatically dead. He's down with 1 second left. But then you still have to do the act of calling a timeout. And that should have taken a second. I mean, had they said time expired, I would have had no beef about it. And nobody even talks about that one. I was shocked, honestly, that they put a second on the clock in the Bears game to give him the kick.
And, I mean, that game was a mess all around. The Bradley Chubb call was terrible. I mean, falling with your full weight on the quarterback. When you tackle a guy, what the hell else are you supposed to do? Like, I don't know what these pass rushers are supposed to do differently. If it's an egregious hit 3 seconds after the guy gets rid of the football, that's one thing. If it's a tackle, I mean, what else are you supposed to do? You know, and that's the thing, too, is that this market is really tight and it's really efficient, and these calls are affecting the spreads on these games. You know, that Bears game, obviously a lot of point spread drama with that one. The Eagles game the Vikings game, Diggs gets the OPI call. That touchdown brings Minnesota to what, 21-19, I think? And Diggs winds up getting the offensive pass interference. Upon review, they settle for a field goal. Cousins throws that horrendous pick. Vikings should have covered that game. But, you know, you got a bad call and a turnover that goes against you. And all of a sudden, you know, if you're somebody, look, for me, it was in the Circa Million. You know, I, for the NFL, I play my contests and that's that. There are other people that have lots of money, five, six figures on these things. And they're subject to these judgment calls or these bullshit reviews. And, you know, and the NFL wants integrity fees. They can shove it right up their ass.
Well, listen, and then the other thing, you know, the individual idiots. Oh, great. No, Odell Beckham, that was what we talked about that during the week was, yeah, sure, he's going to do something crazy and go off in that game because he'll want to be on the cover of the New York papers. The prop was as good a bet as the game was. But really, how about just show up and play the game? The most egregious one? You can't win with guys like this, the Jalen Ramseys of the world, and then Diggs. Diggs gets a touchdown, and he's not 2 yards out of the end zone, and he takes his helmet off. Now, I'm sorry. I'm fining that guy like 20 times. What are you doing? So they miss. They end up missing an extra point, and your cousin makes an idiot pass. But they got, I was convinced that they were going to lose that game by a point because this jackass runs around and takes his helmet off. You can't win with guys like that. And we're betting on this stuff.
It is maddening. It is frustrating. I think all of us should be committed to an asylum because I don't know what to do. Like I said, I mean, it's hard enough to pick the right side here in the NFL, but then you also have to run on the right side of these turnovers, these reviews, where you get these reviews and everybody in the booth goes, well, you know, that's an incomplete pass. And they bring on their, you know, replay expert, Mike Pereira. And he goes, yeah, that's incomplete. And on the field, they see something completely different and go, no, that was a catch. And there's no consistency at all.
Adam, honestly, think about it. Are you doing this too? Literally, every time it happens, guy hits the guy with a slant pass, breaks the tackle, and he's running for a touchdown. Aren't you automatically, you're staring at the screen, waiting to see the yellow flag graphic come up? It's like every time there's a touchdown, I'm sitting there going, okay, is there a flag? It's like you can't just watch the game. You're waiting for the flag to come.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the timing of these flags. Look, I get it. Everyone says this, and it's true. I mean, you watch an NFL game, you watch the All-22, they can call holding on 95% of the plays. It's just a matter of when they decide to throw a flag and either put a team in a 3rd and 18 or, you know, allow a team to get a big gain because they let a hold go by. It's ridiculous, you know? And I mean, again, I don't know what the, from a betting standpoint, to bring this back to, you know, what the context of our show is, I don't know what the hell you're supposed to do. I don't know. If you've got a game that's close to the number, you just have to hope and pray that you're on the right side of those flags that come out or whatever else, because you can't account for it. You just can't.
It's frustrating. There's no doubt. And then I think we're still trying to figure out, you know, who these teams are because you see so little of them. All right, we got two games under our belt, week 1 to week 2. You know, people overreact to some things. I think the given is, you know, Miami is a high school team. It that is unbelievable, and now it gets worse. They trade the DB. Yeah, they got a stockpile of picks, but you got two lines in the league this week that are in excess of 3 touchdowns. That's not a good look. It is not a good look for the NFL.
No, it's not. And I mean, look, you know, teams in all leagues are tanking now. I mean, you know, the Houston Astros showed just how beneficial that could be. The funny thing about it is that some of the Astros, you know, first overall picks were total busts too. So, I mean, they didn't even get those things right. They just have a great player development staff that, you know, was able to get a lot of other picks right. But, you know, the idea of having a team in a professional league that has been outscored by 92 points in 2 weeks is mind-blowing. I mean, there's nothing probably in the CBA or anything in the league bylaws that the NFL can do about this, but I mean, this gets worse before it gets better, right? And not only that, other teams are going to say, well, screw it. We're going to go, you know, 4-12. Let's just go 0-16, and we'll pick first overall. You know what I mean? Will they put safeguards in place after this season to prevent another Dolphins scenario? I don't know.
Well, the other thing, this Antonio Brown thing, I think's got tentacles, and I don't know if it's for years to come, but this guy gamed the system, and, you know, whatever happens, happens, but he gamed the system and ended up going and got where he wanted to go. And now as a result, you got players all around the league on crummy teams going, trade me. So now you're going to have fractured locker rooms. It's nuts. There's just a lot of goofy stuff going on.
Well, let's see if we can sort through it here for some of these games I want to touch on in this segment. And we start with the Thursday night game, Tennessee and Jacksonville. And, you know, for Jacksonville here, no Nick Foles, obviously. The Gardner Minshew show once again. Jacksonville, a game effort against the Texans. Went for two, didn't get it. Credit to Doug Marrone for that decision. But here they host Tennessee on a short week. Tough spot for Gardner Minshew, of course. Second career start, first career start on a short week. But then you have a Tennessee team that, you look great in week one against the Browns, but the Browns have not played well in their first two games. The Colts in a tough spot, back-to-back road games, division road game in the second one, come away with the outright win in Nashville. Tennessee a 1.5-point favorite here. And I mean, look, you can't make Gardner Minshew a favorite in his second career start and first in a short week, but can you really lay a road number with the Titans either?
Tennessee's hard to trust. I think the one thing they've got the workhorse now. Forget the running back by committee. You got a good running back, a good defense. You're well coached. Mariota's inconsistency is the rub there. The one thing I would also say, though, applying to is whatever games we end up talking about, Adam, that week two is always this bizarre week in the NFL because teams circle the wagons and know the urgency that's required that they can't go 0-2. If you go 0-2, 87% of the time you miss the playoffs. So week two, you get these sometimes goofy results where nobody's as good or as bad as they looked in week one. Now, from this day forward, now we start to figure out what are we really dealing with.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, for Jacksonville, I mean, such a poor defensive showing in week one against the Chiefs, but a lot of teams are going to play bad defense against the Chiefs. Much better in week two against Houston. You wonder here with this defense, Jalen Ramsey's a great player, but as you mentioned, I mean, you know, he's a tough guy to deal with. And if he's in an unhappy situation, he's going to let you know that. So will it be addition by subtraction to get rid of him? Will they miss him in the secondary here in a game like this where, you know, short week, a little bit harder to plan, maybe talent kind of wins out more often than not. This is a tough handicap, I think, for a variety of different reasons. You can't really tease – I guess you could tease Jacksonville up to 7.5 if you really wanted to put them with something on Sunday. But outside of that, I just don't think I'm going to be a player in this game.
I don't know how you bet Jags games with any confidence whatsoever. I mean, I thought that this was a team was sitting on a big year with Foles, that he wouldn't lose the games that Bortles lost. But the one caveat I threw it out there on everything I ever said about Jacksonville, if they can play with discipline. And what happens? Week one, Jack gets kicked out of the game. Week two, Ramsey's throwing a hissy fit and arguing with the coach on the field. This team's a box of rocks. I mean, and you're going to put good money on these guys, not knowing that in the third play of the game, they're going to start a brawl. Some guy's going to punch some guy in the throat and get kicked out of the game, and it changes the whole game. I don't know. I don't know how you trust either one of these teams. To me, you know, watch TV. I got Derrick Henry on a fantasy team. All right, I'll watch Derrick Henry. I don't know how you step up to the plate with any confidence on this thing. Maybe under, because I think any AFC South game, that no number, I don't believe, is going to be higher than 3 all year long. Outside chance, maybe a home Houston game. And then I think the field goal kickers are the guys that are going to end up in the ice tub on Mondays.
All right, so as we move to Sunday here, game 467, 468, the Bengals and the Bills. Your Bills 2-0, and all of a sudden the path to a wild card looking pretty good for them in the AFC with all these quarterback injuries and all this other stuff going on. The Bills are laying 6 here against a Bengals team that looked great in week one and looked absolutely Miami-esque in week two.
Yeah, I think the number's inflated, Adam. This team, I will tell you, the defense is the real deal. And Josh Allen, this is a completely different team. Cole Beasley and John Brown, you know, they're not the flashiest guys, but they actually have serviceable wide receivers. But Cole Beasley's impact, now on third and five, Allen looks to see if there's something downfield, but he's got this almost automatic fail-safe to Beasley. It's unbelievable. I mean, he is like Edelman, that he gets 3 yard separation, short pass, he dives forward, gets the first down, moves the chains, and the Bills' offense stays on the field. They don't go three and out anymore. And I think Allen's getting much better, but it's the defense that's the real deal here. And by the way, the roof will come off the joint. This is Buffalo's home opener, and they're coming home 2-0. And as you alluded to, Ed, as a Bills fan, I can't even believe it. It's true. I already started doing this. It was like the Lions-Chargers game was close, and I'm sitting there going, oh, man, that'd be good for the Bills. We do. And that'd be good for the Bills if the Lions beat the Chargers. And now you factor the Roethlisberger injury in there, and the AFC South is a dog's breakfast. Buffalo does have a real shot to be a wild card team.
They do, but here's the thing. You mentioned that you think maybe this line is a little bit inflated now going up from 5 to 6. So do you think Buffalo has trouble getting margin here, or do you think it's one of those instances where Cincinnati just wasn't as bad as they looked last week?
Well, there's another thing that's in play, and that's the Singletary kid. Come up with a hamstring. And if I had a guess, I don't think he's going to play. They've not said anything yet. Like, they're reevaluating it. But he's a difference maker for them in terms of they got Gore to punch it down low. But Singletary's kind of a threat for them out of the backfield. The one thing I would say, it's human nature, bud. New England's coming to town next week, and the Bills are not good enough to be taking anybody for granted, but it is human nature. If the Bills were to win this game, you'd have a pair of 3-0 teams playing atop the division in week 4. They better not be thinking about New England, but it's something you have to at least consider.
Yeah, absolutely, and this is one, too. I think if you like Cincinnati, and there are – some reasons to like Cincinnati. I mean, again, you know, they do have some offensive weapons. I think maybe San Francisco just really rallied together practicing in Youngstown last week. You know, Cincinnati probably gets to 6.5, I would think, in this spot. I don't think this game gets to 7. It could. But if you like Cincinnati, I think there's no shame in waiting around here a little bit and seeing if maybe you can get a little bit better of a price point. Brian, this game got a lot more interesting here this morning before we had a chance to talk about it. Game 477-478, the Giants on the road at Tampa Bay, and it will officially be Daniel Jones as the starting quarterback for the Giants. So what does this do for this handicap in your mind?
Watching the game last week, it was like, what are the Giants doing? I mean, Jones, they were actually breathing in that game. But Manning could do nothing, and they are very shorthanded at wide receiver. But it was readily apparent. The time was now, and why they wasted 2 weeks to do this. I think this kid gives them a shot. He's going to have growing pains. He's going to have games where he makes bad decisions. He's going to have games where he plays really well, and this Giants team is going to pull off some upsets. I don't think they're anywhere near as bad as they've showed through 2 weeks. And it could be a coming out party. Do you trust Jameis Winston?
No, not at all. And here's the thing about this game too. And this is why I want to talk about this game with you. You know, I know that you make a lot of very astute observations. You're very good at watching the game, analyzing what you're seeing. The big thing about the Giants, I mean, Eli and Daniel Jones aside, they were carved up by Dak Prescott in week 1. They were not the least bit ready for Kellen Moore's offense. Then Dallas goes and hangs more than 30 on Washington. Prescott looks great again. Very efficient offensive performance for Dallas. What about that Giants defense? What did you see from them last week? Can they right the ship here a little bit against, you know, a Tampa offense that has weapons?
Well, in this, well, in any game, I guess, but maybe in this game, maybe they get away with it more than others. But the one thing that's been pretty apparent through 2 weeks, although they did try to blitz Josh Allen a few times, but Janoris Jenkins was talking about, I can't cover a guy for 10 seconds. That's the rub through 2 weeks. The Giants don't generate a pass rush. So I don't care if you got four All-Pros back there. If the quarterback's standing back there with 4 seconds to throw, somebody's going to get open. So unless they can dial something up to get pressure on Jameis Winston, you're up against it. That's been the rub for them through 2 weeks. The secondary, it looks like, oh, man, that Giants secondary is terrible. Dak Prescott shredded them. And Allen made some nice throws and was able to consistently move the ball through the air. It's not the DBs. There's no pass rush.
Well, we'll see if the Giants are able to fix that. Total of 48 on this game. So maybe that's something you want to keep in mind here, where the Giants, despite the lack of weapons at wide receiver right now with some of the injuries, maybe Daniel Jones able to make some of those throws that Eli just simply wasn't able to make at this stage of his career. Go ahead.
Real quick, I would say this to you, bud, that Manning was a pylon. And, through 2 weeks, and the Bills did the same thing, they just rush. They bum rush up the middle, and he's got nowhere to go, and the pocket collapses on him. Jones will make some plays with his feet. So, whether it's good enough to win games, I couldn't tell you, but they will produce some big plays with this kid getting out of the pocket and doing something with his feet. And the other thing with the Giants, if you can like fantasy football or hate fantasy football. I had Barkley on two fantasy teams last year, and they're doing the exact same thing with this kid. It's unbelievable. They get the ball first and goal at the two and throw three passes. Give the ball to Barkley. You've got a weapon, and their play calling is an atrocity.
Well, to me, a lot of play calling is an atrocity around college football and the NFL, so that certainly doesn't surprise me here with the Giants. But again, some interesting food for thought there, to say the least. Brian, let's go across the pond for a couple minutes here. The BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. What a field this is. Rory, Rahm, Rose, Casey, Fleetwood, Finau, Stenson, Fitzpatrick, Molinari, Wallace, a guy that you've liked a few times here over the last calendar year. Victor Hovland, who's played excellent. He's got, 17 rounds in the 60s in a row or something crazy number like that. Patrick Reed, a lot of strong guys here over in this field. Break this one down for us a little bit here. What are you looking for?
This is a phenomenal golf tournament, and there's some great prices that are out there. This is one of the big tournaments on the European Tour. Wentworth Country Club. You got, for starters, you should look at the Brits. I mean, that's where the Shane Lowry pick came from. Going to have raucous home support. He was 80-1. Everybody was talking about McIlroy and Graham McDowell, and Shane Lowry fell through the cracks. If you wanted to go on the same premise with the big-name Brits that are there, with Justin Rose, Paul Casey, and Fleetwood, the prices aren't great on them. Believe me, there are some Brits that are price places, price plays. I could look at an Ian Poulter at 66-1. I think Eddie Pepperell at 100-1. I'd be looking at Brits. But the other thing, I'd be looking for PGA Tour players that showed over here. Patrick Reed's over there. What is Andrew Putnam doing there? Yeah, Andrew Putnam can play. Andrew Putnam's 80-1. So you see some of these PGA Tour players, when they go to Europe, they contend. I think something really wacky could happen. Here, Andy Sullivan's 100-1. You know what I'm saying? This is a great event. I mean, somebody really deep down on the list could win this tournament.
Well, and that's what's interesting, because you look at the last few winners here, Francesco Molinari last year, Alex Noren, who plays very well in the European Tour, comes over to the U.S., doesn't play as well, but he's very strong over there. Chris Wood, an Englishman, won this in 2016. Benny on in 2015, Rory in 14. So there have been some big names here, but I think there have also been some guys that, maybe were at the start of their career and finished with top fives here, something like that. Some of those young but really talented players. So I think there are a lot of different ways to look at this one. Did you play those guys that you've mentioned already here, or are you kind of looking for some more price plays?
No, I mean, honestly, and Poulter's on the list. I am going to take a little flyer on Andrew Putnam because I just think a solid PGA Tour member going over there could maybe make a little bit of noise. Another guy, Billy Horschel's 55-1. You could show up in there. But, I mean, the depth of this field, the unfortunate thing, at least the way it's offered here, it's unlike a PGA Tour event where, okay, you get the first two rounds, and then you see where you're stacked up, and you could play somebody on Friday night. That's the one rub with the European Tour events here in Vegas, is they tee off, and you're stuck with the ticket you got. So, no, like I said, I'd be looking at a guy like Poulter and Putnam. The one guy, and you're right, Matt Wallace, is sitting on the board. Matthew Fitzpatrick's another one who's in really good form. But you know what? Matt Wallace, if you could talk about Tommy Fleetwood contending in majors, Justin Rose, a number one player in the world, how often do they win? The one thing about Matt Wallace, he was close when he came over to the States, but the one thing on the European Tour, Matt Wallace does win. Matt Wallace knows how to win tournaments, and he still flies under the radar.
All right, so we'll take a look here at the PGA event real quickly, and this one used to be an alternate event to the Open Championship, to the WGC HSBC event. Now it's a standalone event on the PGA Tour, the Sanderson Farms Championship, and as a standalone event, a little bit stronger of a field. It's still not particularly good, but last week's winner, Joaquin Neiman, is your favorite. Sung Jae-im, the second favorite. Brant Snedeker playing in this tournament. It's not in California, so tough to take him this week. But Benny On, Lucas Glover, Brian Harman, Cam Smith, last year's winner Cameron Champ is 45-1. This is a fairly decent field with some names of guys that we've talked about a lot here on previous segments.
Well, listen, Joaquin Neiman, 12-1. Come on, really? Good for him. He gets his first win. And golf is a form cycle sport. But I played Cam Smith last week. He's 30-1. He played well last week. He was in contention. He did falter. But I Cameron Smith would be a starting point for me. I'd go down to 30-1. Aaron Wise coming off the shelf at 40-1 is a guy I would look at. And I'm looking at this because I think this is something that can happen. Don't forget, albeit it's only a month, but it's a month nonetheless that the season ended for a lot of these guys. Take a break, reload, refresh, or some of them just go and work on their game. Charlie Hoffman at 110-1, he hasn't played since August 11th. What if he figured out what was troubling him and comes back? Charlie Hoffman was like a 40-1 guy all year long. Yeah, his form sucked, but he's been off a month. What do you think he's been doing for a month? He's probably been working on his game. So I think there are guys like that, and I'll throw just because I know you record this, I'll throw an idiot price out there, coming off the that Corn Ferry Tour thing, where guys got their card in that first week. Maybe nerves were part of the equation for a lot of these guys. He's 350-1. A guy like Jim Herman, he played well in the Corn Ferry Tour. He won a tournament a while back. This is that kind of tournament, Adam, where something really wacko happens.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is a tournament. This is an interesting year because it's not an alternate event, as I mentioned. So bigger purse, actually 500 FedEx Cup points instead of 300. This is also a pretty long golf course, 7,400 yards. So guy like Champ last year winning big off the tee. Corey Connors was runner-up. Big off the tee. So that's something you want to look at here a little bit this week too. Dudes that can really rip it out there in the fairway, or if they don't put it in the fairway, the rough not usually as penal here as it is at most courses. So that'll be something for you to keep in mind as well. Lots of good insights as always today from Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people check out those two shows?
KSHP.com. The shows are, there's the listen live function there. And that's noon to 2 Pacific weekdays. And the shows are archived for you at sportsbookradio.com. And we've got the sportsbook directors all around the valley. Great guys on both sides of the counter. A lot of fun information. And I will tell you, Adam, hockey. The preseason games have started. Vegas Hockey Hotline, great guests from around the NHL, and we're gearing up for the start of a hockey season. And I maintained this from the day I moved here. Hockey is the best sport to bet. There are numbers that at times are a little sketchy. They don't do it. I think the backup goaltenders come in, then the line, the total won't even move. Hockey's a real thing. They're great scheduling plays, angles that are awesome, and I'm really proud of both shows. But if you're a hockey fan, we've got phenomenal guests. We invite you to check that out. And, of course, we do videos for you at bangthebook.com, focusing on – we'll do golf this week, but we focus on some of the individual NFL games. And love Tuesday mornings hanging with you, man.
Absolutely, buddy. Appreciate it, as always. Thank you so much for joining me again. Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, we'll talk to you again next Tuesday, man.
Adam, have a great day, pal.
There you go. Once again, Brian Blessing, Sportsbook Radio, Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. I'm looking forward to the NHL season. Didn't like baseball season very much. Football's been frustrating for a lot of the reasons we just mentioned. Looking forward to some hockey here, to be sure. Good market to get involved in. And also, you know, having previously played, always loved the sport. You know, good to sit back and watch some of those games as well. We got one more guest here for this Tuesday edition of the show. That is professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Doing well, Adam. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Good to have you on the program here once again, as always. And look, you know, we spent a lot of time ranting and raving about week two to week three in the NFL, what we saw in week two. Hey, college football, the picture's not super clear here either. Bad coaching, bad officiating, bad a lot of things here so far in the college football season. What were your major takeaways from week three?
Well, you know, a couple of the biggest surprises are our significant upsets we saw. You know, Georgia Tech going down, we knew they were a team with only nine starters changing schemes. The Kansas upset against Boston College, you know, no matter how much you're not a Kansas fan, it's nice to see them perhaps turn the page. I don't know. I don't know if one win we can see turn the page, but Les Miles seems that they're headed in the right direction. You know, Arizona State's upset, some big upsets. And also, you know, we're finding some early value because of what people overperceive very often early in the year. We've seen a lot of teams all of a sudden pop into the AP rankings, get a little big-headed. The other opponents have the game circled because they're ranked. You know, Syracuse comes to mind, but there's been a few teams that have popped in and now have popped out. And lastly, the teams that have gotten outgained and won the week before are now only 8-15 against the spread. You know, this week there are a handful of teams. The teams last week that won their game yet got outgained, Arizona State, BYU, California, App State, Wyoming, Penn State, Iowa, and Kansas State. So keep an eye if that trend continues. Again, teams, if you play them, if they won the game but got outgained the week before, they are 8-15 against the spread so far to start this year.
Well, as I've talked about, and as a lot of people have talked about here on the show, you know, box score study, very important when it comes to adjusting power ratings and stuff like that. But also, without fail, every single week, if you see a team that won but got outgained, money comes in against them early in the week. Just because there is that misperception in the marketplace that does artificially inflate that number a little bit. So if you go through and study the box scores, take Michigan State, for example, here this week. Yeah, Michigan State lost to Arizona State. Should they have lost that game at home? No. They've taken money every week this season here so far, but they outgained Arizona State by 200 yards last week. So that's why their number goes from 6.5 to 9.5 or 10 for this week. You can find line value simply by doing box score study and finding those teams that lost but outgained the opposition or won but got outgained.
Yeah, well, you know, another interesting team is Colorado. You know, Colorado sits at 2-1, and they got outgained in all three games. Why are they 2-1 and lost in overtime last week? Well, because they're plus seven turnovers. Teams that are plus seven turnovers early in three games, those are the teams you want to look to fade. You know, I remember going back to last season, you know, you look at Kansas, and Kansas was a 3-9 team last year. You know, they beat TCU later in the year. But why did they beat Central Michigan and Rutgers early? Well, they were plus six turnovers in both games. You look for those situations where a team shouldn't have won but won the battle because of turnovers, like Colorado. You know, we're not talking about this game, but I'll just continue on my train of thought. Even though I mentioned Arizona State as one of those teams that got outgained, I think the situation is much stronger fading Colorado. You can't get a more difficult scheduling spot. Playing your rival, Colorado State, in the Denver Broncos Stadium, you get outgained, but you're plus four turnovers, so you win that game and even cover. Nebraska, game you're trailing totally out of it. We talked about this last week. You throw a 96 or 98-yard flea flicker, you're back in the game. You got outgained, but you were plus turnovers and won. Air Force, you now face another in-state rival, the option. What do? You got outgained, you go to overtime, you do lose that game. And now you go on the road for your first road game, and it's a division foe that, oh yeah, by the way, has a damn good defense. So, you know, to me, the toughest scheduling spot in the entire country this week is Colorado off two in-state rivals and that Nebraska game.
And not only that, I mean, a tough road game at that. I mean, going to Tempe is not easy at all. It's a very, very good home field advantage. Late game, so the fans will be nice and liquored up. A lot of White Claws going on down there in Tempe this week. And also Arizona State now in the top 25, which, do they deserve to be there? I don't know. Probably not. But, you know, still going to have a very raucous environment down there. My line on that game is 10.5. I'm kind of hoping for a 7 with reasonable juice. Probably not going to get it. Going to have to settle for 7.5. But I will be on Arizona State in that one. And speaking of the market, there are some shenanigans out there in the market this week. UCF, I mean, that line took off yesterday, got as high as 14 at Bovada, 13.5 pretty much everywhere else in the offshore market. I grabbed 13.5 because it felt way too high. It's back down to 12 now. We saw Nebraska hit, you know what, I think Nebraska got all the way up to 14 at some places. That's coming back down a little bit. Utah State got pumped up to 5.5. That's come back down to 4. A lot of push and pull in the market here so far this week.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it, I think, has to do with the Circa. The Circa's numbers, you know, they're the first to post now. They post early on Sunday, and they post sides and totals, which is awesome if you're out here in Vegas. And, you know, the group there, you know, led by Derek Stevens, who's building the new Circa Hotel, is not afraid to post some numbers out there. So people have been tacking them and moving them pretty quick, and people have been following. You know, just to mention, you mentioned UCF and Nebraska. I have my power rating of Nebraska at 14. That didn't shock me. If you remembered last week, we talked on the show, I said UCF against Stanford was my highest power rating game of the entire season. I had UCF as almost a 19-point favorite against Stanford. So you know I love UCF. My power ratings this week only have UCF as a 6-point favorite. So I am on the opposite side. You know, I've watched enough of this Pitt defense. I happen to be on Pitt Penn State under last week. This Penn State defense is legit. So UCF coming off one of their biggest games at home in their career. And then, you know, and then now having that Stanford home game and now traveling to play Pitt with a tough defense on the road, on grass, it negates some of their speed. That is just, to me, a out-of-whack line.
Yeah, my line on that game is 6, too. So I actually feel pretty comfortable with where my number is, considering, you know, again, I mean, I was about a touchdown off from the market in week 4, and you typically don't really want that to be the case as much as you can prevent it. But also, that felt like such a massive overreaction. And look, I was on UCF last week, too. It was a college play that we had in the Golden Nugget. Loved the Knights in that spot. Yeah, they played great, and they blitzed Stanford early and got out to the big lead. Dylan Gabriel looks fantastic. But we talked about this last week, too. Stanford had no interest in that game. It was a Pac-12 sandwich game going all the way out to Orlando. with the iffy weather forecast throughout the week. The weather wound up being fine, but they were worried that that game, you know, could be played in a monsoon, could have been very windy, could have been very rainy. They have cluster injuries on the offensive line already. Stanford had no interest in that game at all. And maybe as a corollary point, Oregon getting bet up all the way to 10.5 now, I don't think I'm going to take Stanford in that game, but this feels like it's a little bit high from an overreaction standpoint too, of Stanford didn't really want to play last week. I think you have to throw that game out to some degree. I know they have plenty of problems, but you know, that's something you want to keep in mind here too, is that not all these wins are exactly what they seem. Similarly, not all these losses are exactly what they seem either.
I agree with that thought. And again, you know, for a guy that was on the UCF standpoint, UCF side last week, you look at Stanford and you know, you have that game sandwiched between your conference opener at USC and your home opener against your main rival in Oregon. You know, it's a spot that's not your goal. Your goal is to win the Pac-12. Listen, you know, you're not a championship team, but my power rating has the game at 10.5. I've talked about Stanford numerous times, how I thought they were completely overrated to be ranked in the beginning of the year. They were a team that got outgained last year. You know, they got outgained by 29 yards per game. You're a 9-win team and you got outgained. You take out Walker Little, the left tackle, who's going to be a top 10 or top 12 pick in the draft. You add in some more O-line injuries this week. And even though Costello's back, if I had to bet a side, I would bet Oregon, but I'm certainly not going to bet a side. And here's a note. Let's remember Stanford 9-0 ATS, their last 9 as a home dog.
Well, and my number is 9 on this game. So I was a little bit closer to where the opener is. And, you know, part of it too, may be, I don't know what Oregon's at this point in time, because they haven't played anybody since that week 1 game against Auburn, where they gave that game up in the fourth quarter. So maybe I'm not giving Oregon enough respect because they didn't have, you know, the week 1 result that they were looking for. But you know, that's part of the equation here too. And there are a lot of games like this, and I touched on some of them on Monday's show with Kyle Hunter. You know, looking at Utah and USC game on Friday, for example. You know, Utah played BYU, weren't very good in that game, won it, haven't played anybody since. USC, 3 really tough games for them here so far this season. Maybe that's something we got to factor in here this week, where, you know, Oregon, after that Auburn game, they took out a bunch of frustration on Nevada. And then I can't even remember who they played last week. Stanford's played actual teams. So that's part of the equation here too, of can these teams get up to game speed when maybe they haven't played anybody the last 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah. You know, Oregon, I'm going to put it in quotation marks, only beat Montana 35-3. But they really emptied their bench at halftime. It was 21-0. They had a 277-95 yard edge at the half. And the defense was handling Montana. Montana only had 12 first downs. But I'll also mention this, you know, in college basketball, we talk about strength of schedule often. We don't really mention it, you know, early, like you said, in football. The week before, when they beat Nevada 77-6, you know, Nevada was in a situation, and Nevada obviously is a team I cover closely being out here. Nevada was a team that was off a Purdue win, had Weber State, UTEP, Hawaii, San Jose State on deck, knew that they were looking at a 5-1 start. Nevada was the team last 2 weeks ago when they went to Oregon that wasn't interested. They sat 4 starters that were banged up just because Jay Norville knew he wasn't going to beat Oregon off a loss to Auburn. Why go ahead and risk guys that are banged up? Let's go ahead and get blown out 77-6. Let's take our 5-1 record, and when we go to Utah State down the road, and worry about winning the Mountain West. So oftentimes we think the Power 5 team is a team that may look past the team. Hey, it works in reverse as well.
Well, that's an excellent point. Absolutely love that point there, talking about Nevada. And, you know, hey, that's definitely part of the equation here too, because there are some games that you're probably not going to win. You know, I mean, look at Miami of Ohio this week. Chuck Martin with an elite-level quote about this game against Ohio State. He goes, it's like we're going out for recess, and they have the first 85 picks. So, you know, I mean, again, that's a Miami of Ohio team that knows, well, we're not going to win. So you know, what's the point of putting anybody at risk? So it's an excellent point there by you. And it's kind of it's sort of a good segue into the first game I want to talk about here, Michigan and Wisconsin, because Michigan got tested by Army. You know, whether they should have or shouldn't have, we don't really need to debate that here on the show, but Wisconsin has played two games. They've given up 0 points and they've scored 110 because they've played USF, who's awful, and Central Michigan, who's a bottom 15 team in everybody's power ratings. So is Wisconsin going to be ready here for the Wolverines? That's the big question I have about this game.
Well, you know, I'm going to argue that Middle Tennessee and Army is not that far off from UCF, what Wisconsin's played. You know, we think Wisconsin's played that much of an easier schedule, but, you know, I'm not, you know, maybe 10 points better the other two teams are. You know, Michigan, I watched some of the Army game, and, you know, they went to this new offense. They made some tweaks, and Shea Patterson's going to throw the ball more, and, you know, he's throwing it 58 times for only 62% against two weak defenses at home. You know, I tweeted out a stat last night, Adam, which caught me by surprise. The last time Michigan won a game straight up as an underdog was 2013 against Northwestern. They're 0-13 straight up their last 13 as a dog. That's amazing that you have this, because they're not a, you know, they're not a big dog very often. Yeah, they might have been a touchdown dog to Ohio State, but every other game is at 2, 3, and 4 point range. So they've lost 13 straight. That concerns me. The Wisconsin team that has won 4 straight in the series. Michigan has lost 6 straight against the spread. You got Camp Randall, and yeah, Shea Patterson is an experienced quarterback. But, you know, the Michigan D-line, you can't look at 200 yards against Army and say it was a bad performance, because they only allowed 3.3 yards per carry and 243 total yards. But to me, you know, I still have to pass the eye test. Yes, Wisconsin blew out two foes, but, you know, if that USF game was closer, we might say, hey, USF's not that bad, and you had to go on the road to do it down in Florida in the heat and humidity, where Michigan has played two foes. Yes, maybe a little better with Army being the best of the four teams, but they played two at home and now making their first road trip.
What is your number on this game?
As I look for it, I am going to I have Wisconsin 5.
Okay. Now, I have Wisconsin minus 1.5. And maybe you can shed some light on this, because I'm not exactly sure. I looked up the Golden Nugget Game of the Year lines back in, I think it was what, the end of May that those came out. Michigan was a 5-point favorite with the opener. Did that move on Wisconsin? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I'm looking right now. In my preseason power ratings, actually in my August ratings right before the season, if this game were played now, my power ratings would have Michigan 3.
Okay.
So I have Michigan down 3 and I have Wisconsin up 5 since the start of the year, hence the huge difference in the line.
Because that's what I was wondering is, you know, how much we've kind of looked at these first 2 weeks and have evaluated and moved these teams. You know, because, again, I mean, I don't think anybody expected Wisconsin to be a 3.5-point home favorite in this game, you know, coming into the season. So, you know, that's what's always so interesting here about having the look-ahead lines for comparison purposes, being able to go back to your summer power ratings. I print off my power ratings every week, and I've got a binder that I keep them in so that I can see, you know, going into the summer, where did I have this game compared to where I have it now? So, you know, I think that's kind of important to be able to do to, you know, maybe take away some of that overreaction. Now, of course, on the other hand, we have 3 data points for some of these teams, so, you know, maybe our preseason thoughts were incorrect. But that was one that I was really surprised by, to see an 8-point, really 8.5-point adjustment from where this line was over the summer.
Well, you know, let's put it this way, though. I'm going to look at it as a different perspective. And I can tell you I am guilty of this, and I'm sure 98% of the country is guilty as this. We saw Michigan last year lose 3 games. At Notre Dame, not a bad loss. At Ohio State, not a bad loss. And the Florida game, which they weren't interested in. you know, with who they returned, with the with who I perceived as the best quarterback in the Big Ten with Shea Patterson, I said, there's no way Michigan can't get better. So, you know, stats tell us one thing, but you go back and you look, Michigan's failed to cover six straight games now. Maybe it is the same old Jim Harbaugh. So, you know, your power ratings are based on what you perceive a team, how much a team is going to improve. Maybe we just jumped the gun and gave Jim Harbaugh too much credit.
It's certainly possible, and it's hard to say that he deserves a whole lot of credit right now for exactly the reason you mentioned earlier, 13 straight losses as a dog for Michigan, and of course, as we all know, haven't beaten Ohio State under Harbaugh. So, you know, we'll see if the Wolverines are able to get that win here this weekend and you know, maybe change the narrative a little bit as they look ahead to that big game coming up Thanksgiving weekend. How about game 349-350 here, Washington and BYU? And this is one of the most fascinating handicaps of the week for me because I have not been all that impressed with Washington here thus far. Obviously, the loss at home to Cal, not a good look. I had Washington both personally and in the Nugget. Expected that game to go a lot differently than it did. For BYU, Utah, Tennessee, USC, Washington. For a fringy Power 5 team, I know they're an independent team, but they kind of have Power 5 level talent for the most part. That's a grueling four-week stretch. So how much do the Cougars have left in the tank?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's expand that grueling schedule by saying overtime against Tennessee and overtime against Utah. Now, overtime against Tennessee and overtime last week against USC. That makes it even twofold tougher coming off back-to-back emotional overtime games. Now, I will say this. There's not many teams that have been off back-to-back overtime games. It doesn't happen that often. Since 2010, teams at home off back-to-back overtime games are 8-2 against the spread. Nothing I expected at all. I expected to see a negative number playing that extra period in two straight games. But again, a small sample size, but it's not a small sample size because I cherry-picked. It's going back to 2010. It's just a small sample size because it's an event that doesn't occur. Now, you know, BYU is a team that I had an asterisk next to in this season. And really, it goes back to last year. Satake, no question, was on the hot seat coming into the season. But if you look back to last year, and this is one of the notes that I wrote in my guide mid-season reading the Salt Lake City Tribune last year, Satake, midway through the season, said this: listen, guys, we got to play for the future. He started pulling guys that were going to graduate and didn't start them. He started playing all his true freshmen. He started playing his redshirt freshmen down the stretch. Yes, they took their lumps against Northern Illinois and Boise and Utah. Yes, they beat UMass and New Mexico State. But this team returned 17 starters and even had much more experience than that. You add in a quarterback now, Zach Wilson, who was, you know, a top eight quarterback coming out of high school at BYU. You know, those are quarterbacks that go to Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama and Clemson. Zach Wilson is a high-ranking quarterback. And you add in, they have their home edge back. You know, you're playing a physical team that has altitude, that is home for a second straight against the Washington team. You know, my power ratings actually have this game at pick. BYU schedule, though, even though that stat I said about the back-to-back overtime games, BYU schedule has been so daunting that even though I have a 6-point difference in my power rating, if I were making a line, there's two different things. What's your power rating and what you would make the line at? My clean power rating is pick. I would make the line BYU 3.5. So really I'm only a field goal away from the line and not a full six and a half points away.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. You know, you make your power rating line, and then you factor in the situations and all the different stuff that's in play here with this game. My number is Washington -5, and I'm not particularly high on Washington. As I mentioned there at the top, they have played three games in altitude the last 5 years, twice in Salt Lake City, once in Boulder. So at least they're semi-accustomed to it, I guess. But I will say this. I'm really hoping BYU wins this game outright, goes to overtime again, or covers the number and loses by a short price, because I really want a good number to fade them next week when they have to go and play at the Glass Bowl in Toledo, which is a brutal spot for them, traveling two-thirds of the way across the country, essentially, after the first four games that they played. I will have Toledo circled, and I will be following this game in hopes I can get a good number on the Rockets.
Yeah, and, you know, Toledo not in the best scheduling spot because, you know, they're going out and playing some altitude as well this week, playing Colorado State. And then they have their MAC opener against Western Michigan. It's also homecoming the following week. So, but again, anytime we know, you know, if you follow Toledo football history, you know, going back to the days when Power Five teams came into the Glass Bowl, it really was a special setting. You know, last year they sort of faltered against Miami of Florida, but that game got away from them early, and they just couldn't play catch up at all. So I agree, totally agree with you the scheduling spot, Adam. I think that's a great point.
I didn't realize it was a tough spot for Toledo. I knew they were coming off the altitude game, but Western Michigan the following week, you know, those two teams have a little bit of a history too. So, again, a lot of things to consider here in the college football market, to say the least. Let's go to game 367, 368 real quick, and then we'll talk some NFL to finish out the segment. Auburn and Texas A&M. A&M, a four-point favorite in College Station. A big true road spot here for Bo Nix and Auburn. How you seeing this one?
Yeah, you look at the technicals, and the technicals are all over A&M in this game. A&M, I mean, A&M has turned into the new moneymaker from Fresno. 16-4 against the spread their last 20 games. 7-0-2 ATS as a home favorite. 8-0-2 ATS at home. And then you look at Auburn on the flip side. They're 2-7 as a away dog. You got a true freshman making his first road start. Yeah, he has a lot of experience, you know, playing in Dallas with a split crowd that helps. But, you know, hey, in that Dallas game, he went 13 of 32. What concerns me about Bo Nix is against Tulane at home, he went 19 of 37, a game that they struggled, turned the ball over, and just couldn't punch it in. You know, they only totaled 379 yards. Last week against Kent State, he only had to throw the ball 17 times, 13 of 17. I mean, they rushed for almost 500 yards. So, you can't even count that game in, but I will look to fade Bo Nix here in a legitimate road spot. You know, the O-line, you have some O-line people banged up for Auburn. That's going to be another issue. And I think it's a legitimate spot here where the Aggies now, you know, Kellen Mond made a mistake or two at Clemson. We know that, you know, he's made a mistake or two in the past. But, you know, he at home, he's been dynamite, and I don't expect him to be anything different. You know, last year at home, he threw 60% with a 19-4 ratio. On the road, he was 54% with a 4-4 ratio. I don't know if I'm going to pull the trigger to be on A&M, but they are clearly in my mix and made my first cut down as I continue to evaluate teams for this weekend.
All right, so as we transition over to the NFL side of things here, some definite talking points to discuss, and we discussed a lot of them in the previous segment with Brian Blessing. But, Rolf, I just want to get your take on, you know, what we've seen so far, what your kind of your initial thoughts are about some of these teams here in the NFL.
Well, I think that, you know, Miami's Miami. I think we're going to have the worst team in the history of the NFL, and we're going to see teams – take advantage. You know, trading their cornerback to Pittsburgh last night shows how much they're in the tank for Tua, or I don't know if they want Herbert or whoever they can pick now. You know, I think it's a situation that I wouldn't even be surprised if they traded one of their quarterbacks with all these injuries coming. You know, the things that jump out at me, you know, we're going to talk about this game, Lamar Jackson, his historic start to the season. I think that right now Dallas to me seems like the best team in the NFC. Yeah, Dak Prescott is getting a lot of love, but I just love, you know, there's very few teams where you can say, very good quarterback, superstar running back, superstar wide receiver, a tight end, a top eight defense. I think they have it all. New England's defense. Bill Belichick is his DC, his own DC again for the first time in 4 years. And boy, can you tell, shutting out Miami, 3 points against Pittsburgh, even in the preseason, he was blitzing like crazy, calling his own plays. And he had 8 sacks against Detroit in the preseason opener, which is crazy if you're looking at Bill Belichick numbers. And I think, you know, we got to mention the Browns, since I'm from Cleveland and you're from Cleveland. Boy, if they can ever play clean, they have potential to be a very good team. Getting that road win and covering for the first time as an away favorite since 2014 was a big deal last night. Yeah, you could say you were playing a number two and then number three quarterback, but to me that doesn't matter. I mean, going on the road and learning how to win is one thing. Going on the road, learning how to win and cover is another thing. Miles Garrett is just a beast. If he would stop jumping off sides, he'd be great. And again, now what do we look at with three quarterbacks out already, and we're in for a hell of a season.
Well, let's go ahead and throw out some news. It's just coming across the wire now on Twitter that Cam Newton's probably not going to play on Sunday. So there's another quarterback down, aggravated a foot injury against Tampa Bay, which, I mean, look, that's fine. I get it. But also, that was Thursday night last week. Like, nothing was said up until now that, you know, Cam Newton, and look, he didn't look himself. We all knew that anyway, but still, you know, you would think that something would have come out a little bit earlier, but in any event now, Carolina, Arizona off the board until we find out exactly what's going on with Cam Newton, who once again, didn't really look himself anyway. But that game that you mentioned that we're going to talk about here, game 465, 466, Baltimore and Kansas City. I think this is one of those games people may have been surprised with the 6.5 opener, and yet this line's going up anyway.
Well, I never tweet negative things, but I had to jump out and say, you know, before we anoint Lamar Jackson, let's remember he played what's historically going to be one of the worst teams ever in the history of the NFL week one. Week number two, since 2009, no team in the NFL was outgained by more yards last year than the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals were outgained by 117 yards per game. That was the worst in the NFL since the 2009 Browns. So you played a historically bad team week one. You played a team that was the worst team in the NFL in week number two in the last 10 years. And now week number three, you're going to play the team that was number 31 in defense last year. So, you know, until he faces Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and Seattle and New England, let's just hold off until we anoint him. With that said, though, he is playing the Chiefs defense. The Chiefs are fading as a home favorite because that defense is not very good. Patrick Mahomes watching him against the Oakland Raiders. The passes he can make to a sideline, dropping that ball on a dime, are some of the best I've ever seen. To me, they're like kids that bully someone and play for 5 minutes and then screw around. And then if they need to score a few more, they play strong for a few minutes. They scored 4 touchdowns in one quarter and didn't do anything the rest of the time. High scoring game, but the only way for me to go is the over. Because you look at Baltimore, it's very, very difficult to go to Kansas City as a young quarterback and play. You know, there's history that goes back and says Arrowhead, you know, when you have young quarterbacks is tough, but Lamar Jackson has the advantage of having gone there last year. That's the only game he's lost as a starter. And yeah, they lost that game, but they only lost 27-24. Jackson was only 13 of 26 for 123 yards, but he can say, hey, listen, I went in there 8 games ago. I know we only lost by 3 to a Kansas City team that was much better than us. I have confidence because of that 3-point loss. So that makes me think he's going to be able to move the ball. If Casey's forced to keep up the tempo on offense, even though it's a high total, I lean with the over.
Yeah, I mean, there was only one way that this total was going to go, and up was the way it was going to go, because also Baltimore with some pretty significant injuries in the secondary. Jimmy Smith, I think he's out for a few more weeks here. I know he was just ruled out last week, and you know he's got a little bit of an injury concern. So that's a Baltimore secondary that's kind of ravaged by injuries a little bit. It's too bad you can't play totals in these super contests and circa million, although everybody would be on the over in this game. Makes sense. You know, as you said, I mean, Lamar Jackson, you think about it last year, the only defense that really slowed him down considerably was the Chargers the second time that he played them. And he's had, you know, he's had a berry patch of defenses to play against. So I do want to see what happens with him as we go forward here, as they play some better teams. But like you said, this week ain't it. I mean, Kansas City is one of those teams where if they don't get to the quarterback with the pass rush, they give up big chunk yards. And you're not going to get to a guy like Lamar Jackson because he's just too mobile. So I think this one is a shootout. Maybe last team with the ball wins kind of scenario. Sounds like you do like Baltimore a little bit, you know, based on, you know, Jackson and how things went against Kansas City last year. So interesting game. I mean, one thing I will say is this. We talk a lot about teasers. We'll talk about them again on tomorrow's show with Brian Leonard. But, yeah, I know Kansas City's a 6.5 or a 7-point favorite. You generally don't want to tease games that are totaled in the mid-50s.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you have more scoring, you know, you have more opportunities. There's a reason those games are in the 50, because you have a high-flying offense, and one team can make a run, and a couple turnovers can lead to a blowout because one team's going to keep up the pace. You know, and something else I looked up, and it really surprised me. You know, on the show, we've talked about double-digit favorites in the NFL, you know, how well they've done over the past few years, and I'm looking it up as we speak. But I was surprised how little or how much a benefit it was. Someone reached out to me on Twitter and said, hey, these 12, 13, 14, 15-point favorites, is it good for me to get them down? You know, we talk about 3 and 7, but it, you know, is it good to get 16 or 17 down to 11? Does that help? And normally when you tease a game, you have about a 22% difference from an APS number to a teaser number. Well, I'm going back since 2014, and we're going to see a lot more 14-point spreads this year because of Miami and because of some teams that are just going to get crushed. If you look back since 2014, NFL teams that are a 14-point favorite have gone 22-9, 71% against the spread. If you tease that 14-point favorite down to 8, you only went 24-7, 77% against the spread. So you're getting 6 extra points. You're paying that huge teaser price. You cover 71% against the spread. When you tease a favorite of 14 or more, you're only covering 77%, a 6.4% difference. That's it.
Interesting numbers to be sure there. And again, teasers are, I mean, they're called that for a reason. So you definitely want to be careful with the teams that you're selecting for those. One more game I want to talk about specifically, and then I just want to get your take on the two games that have lines of 3 touchdowns or more. At Atlanta and Indianapolis, this looks like a good one. What about this line move? Indianapolis was a 2.5 or so point favorite at the open. This line has taken almost all Atlanta money down to 1 at Pinnacle, Pick at some places, 2 at others, but it's still early on in the week here. You agree with Atlanta taking the money here?
I do. You know, granted, Indy could have, should have won against the Chargers. They were still, you know, they were still a team that couldn't get it done because of Adam Vinatieri. They only had 288 yards against Tennessee, be it on the road as well. They got the win, but scoring 19 points. I have trouble thinking they're going to be able to score enough to keep up with Atlanta. You know, Ryan didn't look great against the Philly defense early, and yeah, the Philly defense was banged up on Sunday night. But you know, you're facing a Jim Schwartz team that just all out blitzed you. I mean, very few teams are going to do that. Ryan threw the ball 43 times. Heck, he's thrown the ball 86 times in 2 games at Minnesota and Philly. You know, to me, that means I think you're going to be ready. He's completing 72%. He's not losing anything by playing in the dome. You're a dome team playing in the dome. You know, that gives you a little bit of an advantage. You've outgained both of your foes by 76 and 81 yards. You know, if it comes down to Vinatieri, I mean, if Vinatieri misses any more this week, I'm sure, even though he's a namesay in the Colts, you know, if it costs them the game, I'm sure they have to jettison him for a new kicker. Be it though, back at home, I don't expect him to falter. But I just have trouble, you know, Atlanta's played Minnesota and Philly, two very good defenses. Even though Indy's got a you know, an average defense to above average to me, I think it's the weakest opponent they faced moving forward, and I just don't see the Colts scoring enough to keep up with the Falcons.
All right, so the last thing I'll ask you about here on today's show, New England is favored by anywhere from 22.5 to 23.5. Dallas favored by anywhere from 21 to 21.5. I know that this has never happened before with two favorites in the 20s, but now, what do you make of all this, Rolf?
Well, we have very good teams and we have very bad teams. I'm looking, going back to 1989, so 30 years. In 30 years, I have 18 teams in the database that have been a favorite of 18 or more, and they are 18-0 straight up, no surprise there. 6-12 against the spread, 33%. And if you look at the teams that are minus 21 or more, they're 0-5 against the spread. So we have two this week in what, 19 and 11. In 30 NFL seasons, we've only had five favorites of 21 or higher, and we have two this week. So they're 0-5 against the spread. I would tend to bet against them. And yeah, you could say I was on the Patriots under against Miami. You know, double digit dogs are now 4-25 over under. That's been an angle that's been money. And the Patriots had the issue of going to Miami, what, losing back to back times and losing five of the last six times. This Patriots team was special. They had 2 minutes to go on the clock. Edelman gets hurt. He goes out. The trainer looks at his eye and his face. And they send Edelman back in up 36-0, and they score another touchdown to go 43-0. The Patriots wanted to pound Miami last week. That's the difference. Moving forward, you know, I don't know if the Cowboys have that animosity towards the Dolphins. And, yeah, the Patriots and the Jets are in the same division again. But the Jets are at least going to try. Miami doesn't try to win. You know, if Le'Veon can keep some possessions away from Brady and just do enough to win to keep it close, I would not play either favorite in that role.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Well, you know, I'm an old timer. People know that. And I start every Monday now, I post a couple things at Wager Talk. If you want a one page college football schedule to print off, write down notes, write down your bets, write down line moves. I have it with the Sunday circa lines and totals. So for those that want to follow line moves, if you go to Wager Talk, go to my page, you could print off the college page, and boom, you can have those lines. On my NFL one-page schedule, I list the look-ahead lines from the Superbook. The look-ahead lines went 3-2 this past week. Those are the lines that the Superbook puts out the week before the games, and you could see how much of an overreaction or adjustment there was after Sunday's game. So the college line has a circa Sunday morning sides and totals. The NFL schedule has the look-ahead lines. My power ratings are on there, and Adam, you talked about always remembering what your opening power rating is. If you go to my power rating report, I have them listed alphabetically, and I have them listed by conference. And I also list every week what my moves were and what the opening numbers were, so you exactly know how much I thought a team was better at the beginning of the season than they are now, or vice versa. WagerTalk.com, go to the Rolf Michaels page, and you're all set.
Lots of good information over there at WagerTalk and also on Rolf's Twitter account at CalSportsLV. Rolf, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Talk to you again next week.
Looking forward to it, Adam. See ya.
There you go. There's Rolf Michaels. Once again, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat some college football and some NFL with Brian Leonard. Also do some NFL, college football, and some golf with Wes Reynolds. I do want to let you know that because I've got something going on Wednesday morning, I'm recording that on Tuesday afternoon. So the lines will probably have moved around a little bit. I apologize for that, but I wanted to make sure I got a Wednesday show out to you. So we are recording that on Tuesday afternoon Eastern time. Obviously, could be injuries, bunch of other crazy stuff. I'll throw out the disclaimer at the top of the show. But in any event, I just want to let you know that I am recording that a little bit early here this week with Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Brad Powers. Friday, Super Contest segment and Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.